This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. Late yesterday afternoon, President Bush commuted the prison sentence of Louis Libby, the former chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney. Libby was convicted of perjury in the CIA leak investigation case and was sentenced to 30 months in jail. Libby seemed destined for prison after his appeal to delay his sentence was rejected by a federal appeals court panel Monday. Although Libby now escapes the 30-month sentence, he will still be responsible for a $250,000 fine and 2 years probation. Critics say the president is trying to have it both ways, mercy for a loyal aide, but not a full pardon. Earlier today, White House spokesman Tony Snow had this to say.
The president has the power to commute, and he used it, and he used it in a manner that he saw fit. That's not trying to have it both ways. What the president said is that he is not going to go in and overturn what the jury did. On the other hand, again, he thought that the penalty was excessive. He is certainly permitted to do that. You will concede that the president does have that power constitutionally.
NPR's senior Washington editor Ron Elving will be with us in a moment to talk about that power and explain what the president did. But this is your chance to weigh in. Do you agree with the president's decision, or should Libby go to jail? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or email us, talk@npr.org. And as always, the conversation is going on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, we hop over to merry old England, which became a little less merry for smokers yesterday. But some defiant citizens are flouting the new indoor smoking ban. But first, the Louis Libby verdict. Ron Elving is with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for coming in, Ron.
Good to be with you, Rebecca.
So, of course, this falls well within the president's power. But is it unusual, do you think?
I think it is a bit unusual because we have not seen this president use his pardon power or his commutation of sentence power nearly so much as presidents used to do in the past. Now, part of that has to do with changes in federal statutes governing sentencing and parole and things of that nature. They've changed. But also, this president has not been particularly inclined to listen to the entreaties of some of the many hundreds, perhaps thousands of people who are in a commutation of sentence situation, people who, for one extenuating reason or another, feel that they were given an excessive sentence and are asking the president to commute it.
So then why use this power, which he has shied away from doing it in such a politically charged situation?
Clearly, this is a case of such prominence, and that brings issues of unique interest to the White House and to the president, that the president felt this was an occasion for him to step in and right what he saw as an injustice. Now, I'm choosing my words very carefully here. Obviously, this is a, as you said, politically charged matter. Conservatives and liberals alike and people in the middle have watched this case unfold over several years, and they have connected it in many cases to the larger question of how the Iraq War was sold to the American people, what we then subsequently learned about what had been going on in Iraq with respect to weapons of mass destruction. And, of course, it got connected to what was seen as a cover-up effort by the White House to justify a war that hasn't turned out the way anyone wanted it to. So as a result, this became a kind of surrogate way in which the White House could be tasked, could be, if you will, thwacked with some responsibility for the war that it was not otherwise facing up to.
So this story is not really over. I mean, the president has left the door open to a potential pardon once Louis Libby's appeals are exhausted, which also, by the way, is unusual timing that he chose to commute the sentence before the judicial process had run its full course.
Yes, except that in this particular case, as has been widely noted, the president got the news yesterday while he was still in Maine meeting with Vladimir Putin that the court, the appeals court, that was asked to hold off the beginning of the jail time for Scooter Libby until that appeal of his conviction had run its course, had already ruled unanimously, that there was no reason to do that and that Lewis would have to proceed to jail. Now, whether or not the president ever intended to allow Scooter Libby to go on to jail is debatable. I think there are many people who feel that from the beginning, as soon as the charges were brought, and certainly as soon as the sentence or the conviction came from the jury or the sentence was handed down by the judge, the president said, well, if that stands, I'm going to have to commute that. I'm going to have to issue a pardon. I'm going to have to do something to keep that from happening. Because one thing many of us feel was never going to happen was the marching of Scooter Libby into jail.
So as a sort of political threading of the needle, acknowledging that there was some wrong done, not going for a full pardon, but also not seeing the marching off to jail, do you think this is an effective strategy, or has he just managed to anger everybody?
Whenever you do this, whenever you choose a middle course, whenever you choose not to say these people are right and the others are all wrong, you are going to risk dissatisfying everyone. But then you have to weigh that against the risks of pushing one side or the other a little bit too far. There are going to be many conservative activists who will say this does not address the basic injustice of having prosecuted Scooter Libby in the first place. He should never have been in the dock, let alone actually convicted and sent off to jail. So that's what the president really ought to be doing in principle. However, I think the preponderance of Republican opinion, mainstream Republican opinion, conservative opinion, will be that the president probably made the right call. He didn't blame the prosecutor. He went out of his way to compliment the prosecutor, even though obviously there are some mixed feelings there. He did not criticize the jury. He said the jury's judgment should stand. But then he said the sentence was excessive. Maybe the judge was a little punitive. And since the judge is not a personality that most people are going to recognize or know anything about, and since the word sentence has a kind of negativity about it, the president seems to be, in this case, trying to balance elements. And so he can present that, I think, pretty reasonably, at least to the people who are on his side of the great divide in the United States. Will that satisfy any Democrats or any committed critics of the White House? I think probably not.
And as he's trying to balance all of that, who does he turn to for advice?
I think he turns to the inner circle of people, and this is essentially what the White House has told us, and it seems to comport with experience, that he turns to people like Fred Fielding, the White House legal counsel, who's there to deal with matters such as this, to Josh Bolten, his chief of staff, to Dan Bartlett, who is his departing communications director, who's soon going to be gone, but who's been with him for 14 years. And I think he also turns to Vice President Cheney. I don't think there's any doubt but that everyone expected Dick Cheney to weigh in on the fate of a man who has been his closest aide back into the 1990s. They've been together on a number of different occasions in different offices, and it was perhaps, in some interpretations of all that has gone down on this case, it was in defense of the position of Vice President Cheney, in one sense or another, that Scooter Libby got involved in the initial leaking and in whatever it was he told the grand jury and the FBI agents that resulted in his charges.
Let's bring Leon Panetta into this discussion. He served as chief of staff to President Bill Clinton. He joins us from his office in Seaside, California. Welcome.
Nice to be with you.
So take us inside the White House on this. What goes on in these kinds of decisions?
Well, normally there is a process that's established in order to handle requests for commutation and for pardon that usually flows through the Justice Department and the pardons attorneys there, who generally consider these requests, work with the prosecutors involved, make their recommendations. They then flow through the White House counsel, and then usually after that there's a high-level staff meeting that sits down with the president and discusses the merits of these cases. This obviously did not follow that process. I assume in the end, though, same considerations were involved. The merits of the case, was there any kind of abuse of the process involved here? Was there an excessive sentence? What's the character of the individual involved? Who are those that brought pressure in the White House and that are asking for this to take place? And in the end, what are the political consequences of the decision that the president's going to make? Is it something that's going to help him or hurt him?
Reports say President Bush didn't consult with the Justice Department on this decision. How unusual is that, do you think?
I think that's very unusual. Certainly as a former chief of staff, I don't think it's appropriate for the President of the United States to go ahead and deal with these kinds of legal issues without at least some input from the Justice Department. After all, there are people there who work with these cases. They can look at both sides. They usually get the views of the prosecuting attorney, the merits of the case, and generally they're the ones that present the first recommendations to the White House. I think that's the right process to go through, and as I said, obviously, that was not something that was done here. The president said he didn't have to do it because he was familiar with the facts of the case, but I think you always want to get the Justice Department, which is the primary law enforcement agency in the federal government, to present their views as to whether or not something like this ought to take place.
And when you're weighing the political consequences, we talked a little bit about the timing of this decision being before the appeals had been exhausted, but really on the eve of Libby having to report to jail, so the president couldn't really wait until closer to the end of his term. Do you think there's a different political equation when there's still 18 months left in his term than doing it really just as his bags are packed?
Well, there's, you know, there's no question that this was a special situation, and it took place at a moment in time when generally presidents don't normally issue these kinds of commutations or pardons. Usually, at this point in time, the way the process normally takes place is it usually happens near Christmas, because that's a time when presidents feel that it may be more appropriate to do this kind of to take this kind of step. And generally, particularly in the first term of a president, which is when I served President Clinton, the president's going to be pretty sensitive about taking these kinds of actions, because he wants to run for re-election and he doesn't want to do something that's going to become a huge political issue. These are always sensitive issues. After all, there isn't any president of the United States who doesn't say they're for law and order, that doesn't say no one should be treated above the law, usually wants to be seen as tough in terms of crime. And so generally, taking these kinds of steps is a very sensitive political decision by the president. In this case, it's pretty clear that the president decided he wanted to move now. He didn't want Scooter Libby to go to jail, and he took a pretty unusual step in issuing this commutation at this point in time. And he's going to pay a political price for it, certainly with the American people. But he's at a stage where he's so low in the polls that they may have felt it didn't make that much difference.
We need to take a quick break. We'll talk more about the Libby decision when we come back. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Almost as soon as the news broke last night that President Bush commuted the sentence of Louis Libby, people lined up to praise or criticize the decision. We'll hear two opinions today. On one side, that this move doesn't go far enough, Libby deserves a pardon, and another argument that keeping Libby out of jail sends the wrong message about justice in the U.S. This is also your chance to weigh in. Do you agree with the president's decision, or should Libby go to jail? The number is 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. We'll get to that in a few minutes, but right now we are still joined by Leon Panetta. He served as chief of staff to President Bill Clinton. He's now founder and director of the Panetta Institute, and Ron Elving, NPR's senior Washington editor. He's here in Studio 3A. Leon Panetta, you hear people saying Democrats didn't protest, in this sort of critical way when President Clinton pardoned Mark Rich. He's always sort of followed by the epithet the fugitive financier. His former wife was a big contributor to the Democratic Party and the Clinton Library. Is there a double standard here?
Well, fortunately, I wasn't in the White House when that decision was made. I think in the very least, that process did follow the process that normally one would take in deciding what recommendations would be made. I mean, the Justice Department standards themselves basically state that requests for commutation or for pardon generally are not accepted unless and until a person has begun serving that sentence, certainly does not usually take place until there is the full run of the appeals on the conviction, so that the legal process is exhausted. I think with regards to past pardons and commutations, that was certainly the case. This is very unusual, because not only did Scooter Libby not begin his sentence in any way, but he has not even exhausted the process of appealing his conviction. So I think to that extent, it's much more unusual than some of the past steps that were taken by other presidents.
Leon Panetta, former chief of staff to Bill Clinton, now director of the Panetta Institute, a public policy think tank. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Ron Elving, if you had to lay odds on whether at the end of the appeals process, President Bush would exercise his right to ultimately pardon Louis Libby, what do you think?
From everything that I've heard, Rebecca, I don't expect that the appeal process for Scooter Libby is going to produce any reversal of the original decision by the jury. I think his conviction is going to stand. I think that's what most people expect. And I think at that point there'll be new pressure on the president to grant a full pardon. He may not do that the moment that the court refuses the appeal. He may well wait until after the November 2008 election. And Leon Panetta suggested, Christmas time is a good time for mercy. Also, January 20th, the day that President Bush would leave office in 2009, might be another, if you will, deadline for that mercy.
Ron Elving is NPR Senior Washington Editor. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rebecca.
And let's take your calls. The number here is 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. This is Paul in Chicago. Paul, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thank you. I was calling because I definitely disagree with his choice to commute the sentence. And the question for me isn't as much the political one as the criminal one. Many times a prosecutor will go after one person or one component to use that to pry open a larger situation. And so the question here is it just political ramifications, or are there potential criminal ramifications that are being covered up by the fact that this is being commuted and there's no more pressure on Scooter Libby?
Paul, thank you for your call. Let's hear from Jim in Stockton. Jim, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I actually, I'm coming from the point of view that I don't oppose the commute. I'm coming from the position that you can't satisfy everyone. And in this case, I think the president addressed the idea of punishment, which oftentimes does not go unconsidered. And the important case here is that the punishment was excessive. And a lot of times we don't address that kind of idea. You know, we accept the laws and the guidelines in my opinion, I think it was draconian. It's excessive. And so, anyway, that's how I feel.
Thanks, Jim. Let's hear from Jeremy in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jeremy, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I disagree with President Bush's handling of the situation. Based on the news that I've been hearing, this is the first time in history that a sitting president has commuted a sentence with no time served. And I think it's hypocritical in that initially, when the leak was being investigated, he claimed he would come down hard on anybody who was found in his administration to have participated. And I also have to ask the question, what does this say about his opinion of our judicial system, that he would decide that this is an unfair sentence and take this action? So I think this is hypocritical, and I think that it is inappropriate for him to take this kind of action and contradict what a judge decided was appropriate.
That's Jeremy in Charlotte. Let's hear from John, also in North Carolina. John, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. I believe that there is a precedent for this action for pardons, especially pardons. Bill Clinton did it, and George Bush the first did it, and it's his right as president. And I'll take my answer off the line. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Also joining us now is Steve Moore. He's a member of the editorial board at the Wall Street Journal. He joins us from his office in Washington, D.C. Welcome.
Hello, Rebecca.
So there is an editorial in the Journal today saying that this commutation is a profile in non-courage. Why did the Journal take that position?
Well, we think that President Bush should probably have gone beyond commuting this sentence and pardoning Scooter Libby. We believe that this was a case that became much more politicized than it should have. We believe that Scooter Libby had been railroaded, that the whole hullabaloo about Valerie Plame was overstated, that she was not a covert agent. And for all these reasons, we think that it would have been smarter for President Bush, and he would have had a greater profile and courage if he had pardoned him rather than commuted his sentence. Remember, Rebecca, that despite the fact that his prison sentence has been commuted, he will still, the conviction still stands, so he will be still be a convicted felon, and he will still pay a $250,000 fine. So his life is very much been damaged by this whole process, even though he won't serve time in prison.
So you think that the entire leak investigation was a mistake?
Well, this was obviously a very complicated case, and I've found that in talking to people, people who don't support President Bush's war on terrorism and the war in Iraq are people who generally want to throw the books at Scooter Libby, and people who generally feel that Bush is doing the right thing in Iraq feel like Scooter Libby should be pardoned. And so I think people should look at this in the broad context of things. And the previous caller mentioned that, after all, President Clinton technically lied to a grand jury, and he didn't serve time in jail. And so I think because of all these extenuating circumstances, he does not deserve to go to jail.
What do you think of the prospect of the president ultimately pardoning Libby if his appeals fail?
I don't know. I mean, no one knows what the president's going to do except for the president himself. That's certainly a possibility. But the good news is, for those who think that Scooter Libby was treated unfairly, is at least for now he will not go to jail. And now that the sentence has been commuted, he will not go to jail. The question is whether this felony will remain on his record. Remember, he's a lawyer. He will not be able to practice law, so his livelihood has been very much been put in jeopardy by this whole episode.
Let's hear from Phil in Oakland. Phil, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hi. I really oppose this because I see it as an offense against the men and women of the intelligence services of this country, who are our front line of defense against terrorism. And, they can't be protected now from political vendettas. And I would hope that some of them who have the goods on the multitude of crimes committed by this administration would take it upon themselves to blow the cover of the administration.
Thanks for your call. Do you think the Wilsons, either husband or wife, fit that profile, Steve Moore?
I think if you look at the evidence, Valerie Plame was not a covert agent. She had a desk job in Washington, and she had not been in the field for many years. And technically, under the statute of that law, she was not a covert agent. Remember also that the prosecutor already knew. Our feeling is that this should never have gone to a grand jury in the first place, because the prosecutor already knew that Richard Armitage was the leaker in this case. And so there was a real question about why it is that they wanted to sort of entrap Mr. Libby in the first place.
Well, in addition to calling the president's decision to profile and non-courage, you extend that epithet to Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Stephen Hadley for not helping Louis Libby defend the administration against Mr. Wilson's original charge.
I think one thing, Rebecca, that almost everyone agrees on, whether they think that this was the right thing or the wrong thing for the president to have done, was that Scooter Libby has been a scapegoat in this whole process. And in fact, if you recall, Rebecca, even many of the jurors said that when the trial was over, they thought maybe the wrong person was on trial here.
And who should have been instead?
Well, they were implicating people higher up in the Bush administration, and I don't know, who knew what, but they were implying that people like Karl Rove and others should have been questioned, and perhaps should have been the people on trial.
When we were going through editorials this morning to try to get some editorial participation on this show, I have to say editorials, at least supporting this decision or even criticizing it for not going far enough, were sort of thin on the ground. There were many more criticizing it as a miscarriage of justice or, a politically expedient in some way. Do you think the Journal is an outlier?
Well, I haven't read a lot of these other newspapers. We've been pretty staunchly defending Scooter Libby from the start, and we thought that this whole trial was kind of a kangaroo court. And again, we go back to the issue that the prosecutor already knew at the time that they put Scooter Libby on the stand who the leaker was. And so, what was the purpose of his testimony except to try to get him to commit perjury? Now, I do think, Rebecca, that committing perjury to a grand jury is a very serious offense. I'm not trying to downplay that whatsoever, but there are extenuating circumstances. And I go back to what I said before, that for people who think, well, gee, if you lie to a grand jury, you should automatically go to jail. I mean, what about Bill Clinton?
Well, do you think that part of the, for instance, if Judge Walton had imposed, say, a two-month sentence, this wouldn't be quite such an outcry? Is the length of the sentence part of the problem?
Well, I think there's certainly some of that, Rebecca. I think a lot of people look at that sentence and say, oh, my God, you know, 2.5 years is a long time to serve in a prison for a crime like this. It's sort of an unusually harsh sentence. So, yes, I think if it had been a much shorter time in prison, I don't think there would have been quite the outcry from people on the right calling on President Bush to pardon Scooter Libby.
Steve Moore is a member of the editorial board at The Wall Street Journal. He's been joining us from his office in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's take some more of your calls. This is Suzanne in Pittsford, New York. Suzanne, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. I'd like to just say I am a registered Democrat, but that I am in agreement with President Bush's commuting the sentence to Mr. Libby. I feel it was a political scapegoat from the beginning, and although I'm not a fan of George Bush, I do think he's made the right decision at this point.
And would you have supported a full pardon?
Yes, I would.
So a commute is sort of the next best thing?
Right.
Suzanne, thanks for your call. Let's hear from Louise in Denver. Louise in Denver is no longer there. Let's try John in Grants Pass, Oregon. John, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. This is a very clever strategy. By commuting the sentence, they cannot ask Libby any further questions because they'll deny any answers since he can't be questioned while there's an appeal opened. This is just a wonderful firewall to keep the investigation from going to Dick Cheney's office where it actually belongs. And as far as that Washington Post man saying that Valerie Klein was not a NOC agent and he couldn't
verify a Wall Street
that she
Journal.
Was out of the country,
yeah.
That's nonsense. The CIA itself said that she was an agent.
So you are saying that if Libby were pardoned, then he would testify in a further trial, maybe one against someone who was his superior.
Then he could be called to deliver evidence. Don't worry. His fine is going to be paid. He's going to get a posh job. He is not going to lose anything, and when Bush goes out, he will finish the pardon. This is a disgusting travesty. Thanks, Republicans. Look at what you're doing to our country.
Thank you for your call, John. We are talking about the Lewis Libby verdict. What do you think? Do you agree with the president's decision to commute his sentence? Do you think it should have gone further and been a full pardon? Or do you think that the sentence should have stood and that Lewis Libby should go to jail? The number to call, 800-989-8255. That's 989-TALK or email talk@npr.org. We have an email from Judy in Detroit who says, why exactly are conservatives in favor of clemency for Mr. Libby? Is it because they believe he was simply doing the bidding of Vice President Cheney? If you consider yourself a conservative, answer Judy in Detroit, 1-800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. We also have email from Gary in St. Louis who says, could President Bush have partially commuted Mr. Libby's sentence, reduced it to a shorter duration, if it's technically legally possible, have such partial commutes happened before? That's a question for a legal expert, and maybe somebody will call in with the answer. 800-989-TALK. Let's hear from Sherry in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Sherry, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
We need you to turn off your radio, I'm afraid. You're on a little bit of a delay.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'll do
Thanks.
That right away. I do have a question, and my concern was if possibly this was done because it's sending a message to others who are also lying on behalf of the president that, you know, if you get caught, it's okay. We'll commute the sentence. We'll pardon you because it could possibly start an uproar within the administration.
So you think this might have been a message of protection to other people who might stand up for the president?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. Let's hear from Bob in Minneapolis. Bob, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on something that your last guest said from the Wall Street Journal, which is that they are still claiming that by statute, Valerie Plame was not covert, making this not a crime, even though Fitzgerald just revealed the documents that showed she was actually acting in covert fashion and oftentimes under non-official cover. And yet they still get away with it. They still don't get challenged on saying things like that.
Bob, thanks for your call. We'll hear more of your thoughts about the president's decision to commute Louis Libby's jail sentence when we come back. Plus, England kicks the habit. There will be no more smoking allowed in pubs. If you live in England or spend a lot of time in British pubs, what do you think of this ban? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're taking your calls about President Bush's decision to commute the sentence of Louis Scooter Libby. He was headed to prison for 30 months after being convicted of obstructing the investigation into the CIA leak case. The president said that that sentence was excessive. Joining us on the line is Bob Ewigan. He is the deputy editorial page editor with the Denver Post, and he joins us from his office in Denver, Colorado. Welcome.
Good to be here.
So explain to me the editorial position of the Denver Post.
Well, if I couldn't resist first making a little snarky comment, if you'll permit me, I was listening to your lead-in about whether IQ matters, and I would have to say that this whole Scooter Libby affair proves that apparently it doesn't. You can rise to very high positions in the federal government without having a very high IQ.
That's for the next hour, Mr. Ewigan.
But seriously, we headlined our piece, Bush spares Libby but mocks justice. You know, it's not a good thing. We couldn't help but make the, again, rather snarky but inevitable comparison. Paris Hilton spent more time in jail than Scooter Libby did. And is that really appropriate as a resolution of this case? I don't think so. But unfortunately, at one point our editorial, Alicia Caldwell wrote it for us, but did a very good job. This isn't in isolation. This administration has had a habit of disregarding the role of other branches of government, in this case, the judicial branch. But the same thing showed with the signing statements have gone beyond their proper role to show a disrespect of Congress. The relationship in Guantanamo Bay has, again, ignored habeas corpus to a degree that is disrespectful of our, again, judicial traditions. And there's kind of a habit of this administration going a little too far, carrying its prerogatives, which are there, past the point of reason, if not good judgment.
So we inside the Beltway have the reputation for dwelling on stories like this long after the rest of the country has become bored into, you know, a stupor at the level of detail. How big a story is this in Denver?
Oh, it's not a huge one. We're going through, like, we had 3 days of around 100-degree weather, and when you meet somebody in the street, they say, hey, hot enough for you, not what do you think of Scooter Libby? This isn't huge, and it's not had an enormous reaction, obviously, among the political groupies, and we have our share. It's a big story, but it's kind of the flavor of the day. It's not anything that is going to rock or resonate out here for very long, I don't think. Because, you know, what can you do about it? The president was clearly within his power. Unfortunately, there are many things within the law and within the Constitution that also stink, you know, and this is probably in that category. But it's not something that has dominated coverage out here. Obviously, it was a big story today, but it happened on a slow news day. What do you figure?
Well, was there some talk in the editorial meeting about not writing about it at all?
The only thing we talked about was we obviously were going to write about it. We just talked about whether we would write it for today's paper, which we did, or wait a day and wait till we had a little better perspective and balance on it. We decided against that because that would have put us writing on it on the 4th of July, which didn't seem an appropriate use of the holidays. But our question was when to write about it, not whether. It's obviously something that requires commentary. We weren't outraged, but we were annoyed and disappointed.
Have you editorialized on other aspects of this case as it's been going on?
On the Libby case repeatedly, yes. The I was personally back in the, I'm a Vietnam War era veteran, and I was upset, as I think people should be upset, about targeting a woman whose only offense was to serve her country. And I don't think she was ever personally at risk, but knowing a little about the intelligence business, the problem is her assets. In other words, Valerie Plame hang out a lot at Hamid's coffee shop. What happens is a few weeks later, Hamid turns up dead. People, you know, she was not on the scene at the time that she was outed. She was under no personal risk. But people whose only sin was to help the United States of America, they are at risk. And to me, as a veteran, for that matter, just as a plain old American, yes, that outraged me. That went much too far. Politics should be played by mafia rules. You know, anything goes, but leave the family out of it. Going after Ambassador Wilson's wife because you had a quarrel with him, and especially when his wife was a, you know, a patriotic person in the service of her country, that's just beyond the pale. That's dirty pool.
The editorial says such big footing of other branches of government is not unprecedented with this administration. The president's abuse of signing statements show his disrespect for Congress's power to make law. His insistence that terror detainees at Guantanamo Bay be denied habeas corpus writes mocks legal tradition. Do you see this as part of a larger pattern of hubris?
Yes, it's been, certainly has been, and quite in keeping with it. It's kind of the why did they do it because they could argument, which, as former President Clinton said in a different context, is always the weakest defense you could make. Why did they do it? Because they could. But it's been a pattern of disrespecting the proper constitutional role as the other branches of government. There's a reason we have, you know, our balance of powers and our checks and balances, and they were not well respected in this case.
Bob Iwagun is deputy editorial page editor with the Denver Post. He's been joining us from his office in Denver, Colorado. Thanks so much.
Take care.
You can read what a number of other op-ed pages have to say about President Bush's decision to commute Libby's sentence at our website, npr.org.